questions. I think we wanted to get Ken McGair and Brian back up, and perhaps also the representatives of the TNCs, because there were some more questions. Is that right? So maybe let's start with Brian and Ken and Michael.
I have some questions.
Okay.
So I guess I should have asked earlier, but we talk about TNC trade dress signage.
Correct.
Now, I'm assuming that's something more than a logo. I mean, it's an identifier that a car, an automobile, and a driver have passed muster.
Yeah, that's the company branding.
Is that different than a logo? I mean, is there a...
That's what makes the car identifiable to the passenger and identifiable to the public, identifiable to enforcement officers who are on the street. It is their trade dress, and we will require it be affixed to the vehicle and visible from some distance when the cars are operating.
But is there any kind of an identifying number? So if I was a pedestrian and I was almost mowed down by one of these vehicles, and
so the identifying number will be issued, would be the business license number, which will be required to be inside the vehicle during operations.
Well, that's not really visible, right? That's presumably in a glove box or something.
Or on the vehicle, it would be the plate number on the vehicle.
The license plate, which matches with the application that the driver and passenger are connected.
Okay. And then I spoke with, during one of our, I guess, you know, thinking about the business license issue, I want to propose an amendment that requires that the business license either be submitted to the company by the prospective driver or submitted to the company, the TNC company, by our revenue bureau once a person has applied and received a business license. So if you want me to wordsmith it, I will, but that's the intent. In other words, we don't rely on a certification from the TNC that a driver has a business license, or we don't rely on if we catch you without your business license, we've got you. It's an absolute condition for doing business as a driver and as a TNC that the driver must provide a business license to that company before they can be permitted, just like a safety check, just like background check.
Understood. Because you are directing Director Treat to promulgate rules, that could be an amendment to the resolution as a direction for her.
Second.
Okay. To the resolution.
Yes.
Okay.
And that there be a mechanism so that you don't get activated on the application if you haven't provided that.
Yes. Exactly. Okay. And I guess those were my questions.
And I have a few. We heard that cab driver pays $100 a year for a permit, and that some of them will be expiring in this 4-month trial period. Will they be required to get a new permit?
Commissioner, I think that we need to suspend the renewal fee for the duration of this pilot, and I'd like to know how we can most expeditiously do that. Mr. McGarrett, can we amend the resolution to direct Director Treat to include that in the regulations?
The permit fee, Commissioner, for taxi drivers is in the code. It's in 0.590 of the fee table, and that would be a code change via the ordinance, an amendment to the ordinance.
Can we file that for next week?
We can move that amendment now, and we can vote on it.
I'm sorry, catch me up. What's the amendment you're proposing, Commissioner Novick?
To suspend the renewal fee, the permit renewal fees for taxi cab drivers for the duration of the pilot, and I'm just trying to figure out procedurally what's the best way to do that.
You can either amend the code or via amendment, or you could refile an ordinance. I would point out that the 120 days is a four-month period, is that right? So a third of the year, you would be two-thirds of the taxi cab driver permits have already paid for that renewal, so this would only apply to a third of them, approximately.
So in order to avoid postponing this whole process for another week or weeks, do you think that we could pass this resolution today and then file a very narrow temporary code change for next week?
Yes.
That's what I would propose doing.
Thank you. So my next question is about the $20,000 fee proposed for the transportation network companies. We heard from RadioCab that they'll pay three times that in fees over the 120-day period. So how did you settle on $20,000?
So all of our fees should be based on true cost recovery to administer the program. In evaluating the private hire permit fees, we discovered that they are not actually based on true cost recovery. In phase two, the task force is direct asked staff, and staff is intended to completely recalculate all permitting fees and to include fees for all modes of for-hire operators in the final recommendations, which will be presented to you come about July, so those can be actually instituted into city code so that we have cost recovery for all permitting fees. Now, for the $20,000, that was an estimate based on staff's analysis of the administration that would be required to issue permits for the TNCs and to do auditing and enforcement actions.
So we've heard that Lyft has far fewer drivers than Uber. Is the $20,000 a flat fee, or is it dependent on the size of the company and the number of permits you're expecting?
For the pilot program, that is a specific $20,000 flat fee for all TNC operators.
That doesn't seem fair. If some companies have far more drivers, if you're looking at cost recovery, what's the expected enforcement mechanisms, and how much is that going to cost for you to be checking on these companies?
So we are not in planning for the pilot programs to add any more resources to the Private Fire program. So those costs for the program will remain the same.
So what is the enforcement mechanism? How many people will you have checking?
There are currently five regulatory program specialists who are out enforcing, plus we have the administrator who can enforce.
So we're going to have 1,000 more drivers, and we're not going to have any more people checking?
Well, I think part of that is the auditing function that we will randomly audit the certification list and the driver's list. So we have that as well. But on the street, they have six.
I would also like to point out that we're working on adding some administrative help so that we can move some of the administrative work that the current regulatory program specialists are doing can be put onto the administrative help, and they can focus more on enforcement efforts.
So how does a company like Curb, which is a transportation network company which uses taxi cabs, it's basically the app that gets somebody like me to get to a taxi driver rather than an Uber or Lyft driver, would they have to pay $20,000 as well?
So they are not a transportation network company. They are a third-party dispatch provider that partners with permitted taxi companies.
So they would not have to pay anything?
Correct. We currently do not have any fees specifically for third-party dispatchers.
Okay. My next question is about was raised about the age of the driver. Our regulations say 21, which having had three children just past 21, I would be very nervous about any of them being taxi drivers. Why do we pick 21 rather than 25?
That's in the current code
for taxis and LPTs.
Can we impound Uber cars? The mention was that we could tow.
As part of the ordinance, we have proposed some civil forfeiture language that strengthens our position legally in terms of towing and impoundment of vehicles. So the long answer is yes.
Okay.
Or short, I guess.
long hearing, short answer.
Yeah.
And then my final question might be for some of the cab companies. Are all cab companies required to have GPS in all of their vehicles?
Are they required to have GPS? Or do they typically?
I don't believe that's a requirement in our code.
Not a requirement, but it's a practice that all the cabs do have GPS.
Typically do.
Because that's, colleagues, I have learned to my detriment over the last 7 months that that's incredibly important in figuring out when a crash occurred is to have that GPS in a commercial vehicle. So I'm wondering, if that doesn't show up on your personal cell phone, but it does show up on a GPS. So I'm wondering if we're in this, when is the app on, when is the app off, which phase are we in, how are we going to know in the transportation network cars where they are and when an incident happened?
For transportation network companies, you're asking how will the city know where the drivers are?
Yeah, how do you pinpoint when a crash happens? If there's all these three different phases of when the different coverage applies, how does in a crash situation, how do you pinpoint when the crash happened?
You can take a look at all of the activity that has occurred on the platform and determine, you know, what events in the real world occurred based on the different activities on the platform.
But you wouldn't know whether the car had hit another car just before pressing the button or just before after pressing the button?
I'm sorry, I need some clarity on your question. What button and who's pushing the button?
The driver of the transportation network company has to tap their screen, as we heard, in order to accept a ride. There's no, if without the GPS, which tracks real-time situations, there's no way to tell when the crash happens.
You know, I think a TNC representative will better answer that question.
Call both of them back up, yeah. So why don't we save those technical questions for them. Other questions for our team?
So I have a question, foreshadowing what I think will be a discussion we'll have a little bit next. And that is, two questions. One is, if the resolution passes, when does the director intend to promulgate and issue interim rules?
She will be immediately directed to do so. So that can be taken up as soon as tomorrow.
Okay. And when is the earliest TNC could come in and seek a permit?
That would be based on the director actually instituting the administrative rules to institute the policy. And it would be dependent upon the companies applying for a permit, staff reviewing the permit application, and either issuing a recommendation to the commissioner in charge to approve or deny that application.
What's your sense, Brian, in terms of the time, how much time will it take once you've established the rules and the process, when is the earliest that you anticipate a permit issuing?
It could be a matter of days. It could be a matter of days.
So you have the agreement already drafted that sets forth all the requirements?
The principles presented to you today are significantly or would essentially serve as those administrative rules. There would not be significant changes with the exceptions of amendments that council would like to incorporate tonight.
And the written agreements that the TNCs have to enter into, those have been drafted?
They're in the process of being drafted, and they're not finalized, but that would be, as you mentioned, Commissioner, something that would have to be done before the company permit is garnered. There's also the issue of their insurance policies and the additional endorsements. We'd like to have that as well, so that takes sometimes a few days.
But for purposes of the pilot period, the administrative rules will be what is described as guiding principles?
Correct.
So is the council, does the ordinance waive the usual administrative rule process?
The ordinance itself?
Yes.
The ordinance applies to the code changes for taxi cab companies. The resolution, it doesn't waive any kind of normal administrative rule process. That process is already set out in terms of an interim administrative rule in the code under 1645.20J. We're simply applying that rulemaking authority that the director already has in an interim capacity.
So technically, just procedurally here, the resolution adopts the rules and the ordinance makes changes to the code.
Correct.
Okay.
Resolution directs that the rules be adopted.
Correct. It doesn't adopt any rules. It directs the director to promulgate rules.
And the ordinance makes changes to the code.
Correct.
What is the effect if the council adopts the resolution but not the ordinance tonight? What is the effect of the legal landscape?
The resolution, the director would then be directed to promulgate rules under the guiding principles in the resolution. And I'm sorry, the second part of your question was, and does not adopt the ordinance?
Yep. The ordinance, as I read it, is an emergency ordinance.
The code remains unamended, non-amended. Chapter 1640 stays as it is.
And Mr. Regier, wouldn't that have the effect of continuing the fare regulation on the taxi cab companies?
It would have the effect of continuing the fare regulation and all other regulations that are currently on taxi cab companies.
So if we wanted to do them both together but not as an emergency, we would delay acting on the resolution for 30 days.
Is that a legal question or a statement? Yes.
That's an option.
That's an option.
And then the legal question that will come up, if that comes up, is under 16.40.520, there has to be a finding that a failure to act promptly will result in prejudice to the public interest or the interests of the affected parties. So what would be that prejudice to the public interest?
It's critical that the city regulate all private-for-hire transportation operators. So without that ability to regulate the regulators who are providing nearly the same service and without having the rules that apply similarly across the board, the city would be disadvantaged in that way.
Frankly, Commissioner, we have operators, TNCs, operating in the city right now. They are dropping off passengers every day. So there are unregulated TNC drivers in the city right now, and I guess that would be a potential prejudice to the public.
The fact that they're currently
currently unregulated, and we'd like to get them under a regulatory scheme.
Let's take the Uber and Lyft. They have testified at a prior proceeding that they will not operate in Portland until we pass authorizing legislation. Correct?
That's what they testified to. Yes.
That's what they told the council.
Correct.
They will not operate until we give them the green light. Who are the other companies that are operating illegally?
Here in the city of Portland?
I'm sure there are. I mean, there are. We've heard testimony of outside taxi cab companies dropping off in the city of Portland. I can't speak to all the enforcement, but I'm sure there could be.
Other questions at this point for these three resource folks? So let me have you stand aside for a minute, and let's call back up representatives of the two TNCs that we've heard from this evening. I think Ms. Chang left, but Michelle Jaguer is still here on behalf of Lyft, and Ms. Steger is here on behalf of Uber. I think there's some more questions based on the discussion. Yeah, Ken, you should stay handy. Thank you.
Well, again, I don't have a question. I'm just saying I would like to have, as part of the probably better fits under the private for hire program under Section 12, language that would say, as a condition for the TNC permit, the TNC must require a driver's license, valid business license number, in order to access the platform. That's the best I could draft it at this hour.
Do you mind if, can I make a comment?
Yes, please.
On that?
That's why we asked you out.
Yeah, sure. So currently, the driver that testified was correct in that we have already sent out emails about the business license. We have been offering that in person in some of our in-person driver interactions. We even had some people filling it out via paper. So we're definitely committed to having drivers have their business licenses. It's also important for them. And I also wanted to add that we will commit to deactivating drivers that do not have their business license.
So you would deny access to the platform if they do not have a valid license?
Correct.
Business license. Okay. Great. I guess I just want to memorialize that language.
the right place. But
Mr. Gere, I think Ms. Chang already indicated something close to that, but I wanted to give you a chance
correct.
To clarify
and,
that.
Correct. And just for the record, because I am at City Council, I am a registered lobbyist in front of the City of Portland, so I want to make that clear for the record. And I'm not an operations or legal or general counsel, but my clear understanding is that currently Lyft is working nonstop to make sure every single one of their drivers gets their business license. They've had great compliance already today from the text that they sent to every single driver that had expressed interest. They are planning to bring a computer into their office over in Southeast Portland so that when new drivers are coming in tomorrow or the next day to get their vehicle inspection, the very next thing they will do is go to the computer and sign up for their business license. And so their clear intent is to ensure that all of their drivers get their business license. They will work with the city to make sure that happens, and if it doesn't happen, they will be prepared to do what the city's enforcement mechanisms are.
That's great to hear. I just want to have language that
but let's be clear. This amendment mandates something that that particularly Uber has been reluctant to agree to. So are we clear about what this amendment does, and from a regulatory point of view, that your permit hinges on providing this information?
Yes, and we always have stated that we will support and follow whatever regulations are put into place.
All right. So,
My suggestion was under number 12 in the
In the ordinance or in the resolution?
In the ordinance.
The resolution.
Resolution.
Commissioner.
The guiding principles.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the resolution?
Resolution.
So, yeah, number 12 says permits are required for transportation network services. Again, I would just add a sentence in there, a freestanding sentence that says, as a condition for receiving a TNC permit, the TNC must require a driver's valid business license as a precondition to access the platform. I guess that's... I think Commissioner Fritz more or less seconded that.
I did second that, because that actually does then give us our own independent ability to, we know who the drivers are, so we will then be able to check to see whether the lists that were given are complete or not.
Okay. Any further concerns with that? That language clear? Okay. Anything else that we need to ask of these TNC reps or Mr. McGare? And are you ready to go ahead and proceed to consider the amendments and then see if we want to act on the resolution? Okay, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have, I believe, three amendments, if I've captured them all correctly, which is first the one that you proposed earlier this evening, Commissioner Fritz. Second, suspending the driver renewal fee for the duration of the pilot project. And third, this condition that you just articulated, an amendment to principle number 12 regarding requiring a valid city business license prior to accessing the platform.
Mayor, actually,
and for the TNC to receive its permit.
Yes, okay.
Anyway.
Mayor, actually, as to suspending the permit renewal fee, that's something that is in code. So that's not an amendment with the resolution. That's something I plan to bring as a standalone as soon as possible.
Okay, so you're going to bring that back as a subsequent proposal. All right, so the only two amendments to the resolution, just trying to keep this straight, the only two amendments to the resolution that we want to discuss and vote on are the one that you proposed, Commissioner Fritz, and the one that you just proposed, right? Commissioner
Right, Sutton. And we should probably, if I might suggest, amend the ordinance, because otherwise you'd have to have another public hearing on the amendment.
I'm sorry, say that again.
If the ordinance is amended at a later date, that requires another hearing. And while the 40 people who didn't get to testify might like that, I suspect that the outcome would not be any different.
So your suggestion is?
So after we voted on these two amendments to the resolution, also vote on amendment to the code so that that's...
Okay, we can do that. Right?
To be clear, I don't think we have a motion to amend the code on the table yet. Now, if somebody wants to make one, that's
right.
Up to the body. But I think what Commissioner Novick was saying is he would bring a separate item to specifically amend the code to a later council session.
Well, my question is, can I make can I move to amend the code today, and can we attach an emergency clause to that amendment and pass it today?
I think you can. If you want to try to wordsmith it and do it today, there's nothing stopping you.
Okay. Well, let's take this in order then and act first on the amendments, proposed amendments to the resolution. So first we have Commissioner Fritz's amendment that says that would be an additional resolve in the resolution that says, be it further resolved that the pilot program will not commence before the state of Oregon has completed rulemaking ensuring that appropriate insurance coverage is available to all Oregon Transportation Network Company drivers during all periods of vehicle operation. So, any further discussion about that amendment?
If I might speak to the motion, sure. Mayor, we have heard today that some drivers for the TNCs are aware that they don't have adequate personal coverage and are switching companies. They haven't yet done that. The state of Oregon is intending to fix this problem, but they haven't yet. So delaying until they have fixed it would seem prudent and reasonable to protect the citizens of the state of Oregon and particularly the citizens of Portland so that drivers who are driving commercially not only have adequate coverage, and second, which 50,000 is not adequate coverage in my opinion, but second of all, are protected with if they and their families get terminated by their insurance company.
Thank you. Commissioner Nevin. Folks, let us deliberate now.
Commissioner, so the state legislation would protect drivers from having their insurance terminated?
Yes, indeed it would. Would you like me to read the proposed language? It'll take me a minute to find it. It's, this is in House Bill 2237. It's on Section 4, Part 7, and it would say, it currently says, an owner's insurance policy for a private passenger motor vehicle may not be canceled, voided, terminated, rescinded, or non-renewed solely on the basis that the vehicle has been made available for personal vehicle sharing pursuant to a vehicle policy sharing program. And they're going to add, or that the vehicle's registered owner has made the vehicle available for the vehicle owner or designated operator to actively participate in a transportation network company.
Okay. Looking at your amendment, which it seemed to be directed to ensuring that appropriate insurance coverage is available. And I didn't realize that you were saying that you're waiting on the legislature to protect drivers from violating the terms of their insurance policy.
It's both the protection, which, by the way, these bills would require three times the minimum coverage rather than twice the minimum coverage, but it's also that then the drivers are protected because many of them don't know that they are not covered under their personal insurance and that their personal insurance might, for their whole family might be canceled if they're in an accident while they're driving commercially.
Do we have any guarantee that these bills will pass?
Well, no. And still, we should not be moving forward on a pilot project that actively puts citizens at risk when we know that there's this insurance issue.
Hey, folks, I asked you to let us talk, okay? Let us deliberate. All right, other discussion about this amendment? Are you ready to vote on the amendment? Okay, let's take a roll call vote on the amendment, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
No.
Novick?
No.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
No, I'm not going to support this amendment. I think we have to regulate the level of insurance here, and all of us have waited for the state legislature to act in vain before. No. So the amendment fails. Let's move on to the other amendment, which is Commissioner Saltzman's amendment. And here's my version of the language, see if I captured it correctly, which is revisions to number 12 in the principles that says, as a condition for receiving a transportation network company permit, the transportation network company must require a valid city business license prior to accessing the platform.
Yep.
Did I get that right?
Yep.
Okay. So further discussion or questions about that proposed amendment? Okay, then let's take a roll call vote on that amendment, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz? Hales?
Aye. Okay, that's approved. So ready to move forward on the resolution itself? Okay. Roll call vote on the resolution.
Fish.
I'm sorry. Was there another?
No, that's to code, not to the resolution.
But before we get to the resolution, you're taking a vote now on the merits of this matter?
On the resolution itself.
Yeah.
And then we'll pick up the ordinance.
Well, so sorry, don't lose the thread. Commissioner Novick, your amendment is going to be to what?
It's to the ordinance, as opposed to the resolution.
So why aren't we taking that up now if it's an amendment?
Because there's two separate issues, the resolution and the ordinance.
So after we vote on the resolution, we come back to your amendment?
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay, so now let's take a roll call, please.
Fish?
Well, I want to begin by thanking Mayor Hales and Commissioner Novick for managing a very complicated process under a, shall we say, challenging timeline. I have found the public process informative and productive, and it has helped shape my view of this issue. I also want to thank the Citizen Committee that worked diligently to forward thoughtful recommendations to the City Council. Tonight, I'm going to focus largely on Uber for two reasons. If this matter was simply about Lyft, I would probably have a different view. And to my knowledge, Lyft has not operated illegally in our community. Now, recently, my office has been flooded with emails, tweets, and phone calls from people joining the Uber chorus. And they include the Oregonian Editorial Board, the Portland Business Alliance, the travel industry, tech companies, members of my family, and others. As my colleagues know, however, I have been a skeptic from the beginning. Let me be clear about something. I am no apologist for the taxi industry, which I think would benefit from competition and which could use significant service improvements. And I say that as someone that, because I no longer have a car, uses taxis along with buses and Macs and other kinds of transportation. At the same time, I am not anti-rideshare, but I don't like bullies. And I don't care for people and businesses that act like the rules don't apply to them. A valet once told Winston Churchill that he was very rude. And he responded, "Yes, but I am a great man." Unfortunately, that's Uber's business model. They operate illegally in cities around the globe while claiming that they are a great and innovative company. That, in fact, is what they did here in Portland. In fact, it's a metaphor for our economy as a whole. The big and powerful play by one set of rules, while everyone else plays by another set of rules. I was struck recently that a number of Wall Street firms that were bailed out by taxpayers during the Great Recession reported record profits. At the same time, one of the families featured in American Winter, right here in Oregon, is facing the foreclosure of their home. I've applied a number of filters to this process, and my decision-making has been guided by a set of values about a level playing field, about protecting low-income families and people with disabilities, about protecting health and safety of riders, and about ensuring compliance with our laws. Thanks to the mayor and Commissioner Novick, we've seen measurable progress in all of these categories, progress that has frankly eluded cities across the country. In fact, I've made by executive order, I'm asking them both to handle all my negotiations in the future. Except for the insurance issue and some of the other regulatory pieces, I'm frankly less concerned when, not if, my 22-year-old daughter uses Uber. But something still troubles me about companies that don't play by the rules. And here are some examples. Despite what we've heard throughout this process, Uber is currently operating illegally in cities across the globe, operating in a way that puts the public at great risk because there's no regulatory framework. Uber's user agreement is one of the most anti-consumer documents I've ever read. It disclaims liability, and it shifts legal risks to drivers and passengers. That may be the new economy, but we don't have to embrace it. And they're using the best lawyers across the country to enforce the terms of their one-sided agreements. Let's look at the Americans with Disabilities Act, something that we celebrate as a community. Uber says that it doesn't apply to them. They dismiss it and say, "We're not a public accommodation, and we're not a transportation service." And when the Justice Department got involved, they just added more lawyers. Really? Uber classifies their drivers as independent contractors. They're not owners, and they're not employees. And for those of us who care about maintaining wage standards, last I checked, it means they don't have any rights to organize and to fight for better wages and conditions. Now, Uber has said the right things throughout this proceeding, and there's an old adage. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Well, that adage applies to another so-called innovator in our community, part of the sharing economy. That's called Airbnb. They're another Silicon Valley juggernaut making money hand over fist. And even after we worked with them to establish regulations for operating legally in our city, and the mayor welcomed them on reasonable terms, 95%, by the last estimates, of hosts are still not complying with our laws, so we can't guarantee that guests are safe. Airbnb says all the right things, but they still grant access to their platform to hosts who refuse to follow community standards. Uber, I might add, is belatedly saying all the right things. In fact, they're being lauded now for taking a kinder, gentler approach in Portland. At the end of the day, for me, it's deeds, not words, that matter. And their track record speaks loudly about their corporate ethics. On the basis of the record before us, I'm not ready to green light an experiment in deregulation where things could go horribly wrong for consumers. Until Uber and other companies like them demonstrate they are willing to change their ways and operate by reasonable rules, I'm not really ready to welcome them to Portland. I believe that you trust.
Hey, folks,
please. I believe in the concept of trust, but verify. It will take more than an army of publicists and strategists, political consultants, and a loud social media campaign to convince me to trust Uber. They will have to earn my trust over the next 120 days. I respectfully vote no.
Saltzman?
Well, this has been something, I guess, to the extent there's choosing sides, I guess I don't really have a dog in this fight. I think that this is a reasonable undertaking to have this 120-day period to allow ride-sharing to find it, either prove itself or fail. And I do worry about impacts. In fact, if I had to choose a side, I'd probably side more with taxi cab companies and drivers, just because you've got a lot more color and character than I've seen so far. And I've always found that to be the case. So I have a lot of empathy for the taxi cab industry, but I also appreciate the points Commissioner Novick and Mayor Hales have made that the case for heavy regulation in the light of sort of the changing economy, the changing preferences of Portlanders for how they want to get around from point A to point B, there's a lot more choices now, and people want those choices. And I believe, while I do have concerns about, you know, nobody's assured me this won't be a race to the bottom in terms of wages for drivers. And I think, but that's something we're just going to have to find out in the ensuing 120 days. And I guess, you know, I feel that we're on pretty solid ground as a city, that we have legal authority to permit and govern the operation just as we do with cab companies of TNCs. And so to the extent there's a fear the genie can't be put in the back in the bottle, I think we're on pretty solid ground if, in fact, that turns out to be the direction we need to head into. But I don't know that answer, and that's why I'm prepared to support undertaking this 120-day experiment that Commissioner Novick and Mayor Hales have worked hard on, and I think it's something that we'll see, and I will certainly not be shy in speaking up if I feel that there are things that need to be corrected as we learn through this 120-day period of experimentation. And I vote aye.
Hey,
aye.
Folks, cut it up.
Novick?
I'm an old-fashioned guy. Like Commissioner Fritz, I am unlikely to ever take one of these so-called ride-sharing rides. And heck, I still haven't gotten over the adoption of the designated hitter by the American League in 1973. I don't like Uber. I appreciate that they've been behaving themselves a bit lately, but until they fire the guy who said that he wanted to create a slush fund to blackmail journalists, I'm going to keep on saying I don't like Uber. But we're not voting today on whether we like Uber. We're voting on whether to allow a particular business model to operate, which is a different question. If Uber or Lyft or anybody else or any taxi companies break the law, then I have no problem going after them to enforce the law, just like I had no problem going after Uber in December and fining them, and they paid the fines. I know that people have concerns about letting this business model in. But there's a couple of points that I think people need to know. As to background checks, we asked Police Chief Larry O'Day if he was satisfied with the third-party background check procedures, and he said he was. Now, no background check is going to prevent any bad thing from ever happening. Uber drivers have done bad things. Taxi drivers have done bad things. If you Google taxi drivers assault, you will find examples of taxi drivers assaulting people in Winnipeg, in Denver, in Nashville, Atlanta, in London. That's just what comes up in the first page. That doesn't mean that we should ban taxis. It just means that we can't prevent all bad things from happening. I have to say that I was a bit skeptical myself when in December the mayor was confident that we could come up with a way for the TNCs to operate in just a few months. I wasn't sure that we could satisfy my concerns in that period of time, but we've had tremendous work from the task force that we appointed. We've had tremendous work from staff. We've been informed by a lot of public discussion. So I think that, to my surprise, we are ready to start an experiment which does provide for fair competition. And again, I do think of it as an experiment. I think that government should occasionally move ahead and do something that it's not sure is going to work while reserving the right to modify it. We shouldn't take the attitude that whenever we adopt new rules, those are rules that exist forever. No. Heck, we adopted a tree code not that long ago, and I had conversations with Commissioner Fritz recently about the fact that some of the rules in the tree code probably need to be changed. They aren't cast in stone. It could be that at the end of 120 days, we will conclude that these temporary rules should not be cast in stone. So again, I very much appreciate the work of the task force. I very much appreciate the testimony of everybody, pro and con this experiment, who've testified. I think that, as the mayor said, we've done something unique in Portland. We didn't roll over when Uber came to town illegally. We fought back, and then we insisted that they follow a long line of regulations before they're allowed to operate. And what I'm especially proud of is that we are insisting that the TNCs meet a standard of service for people with disabilities. So I recognize that people have a lot of concerns. People have a lot of concerns about any kind of change in anything. And Commissioner Fish has talked about how people who've made investments in the current model might feel disadvantaged by a change to the model. Well, unfortunately, whenever a government changes any type of regulation, then there will be some people who feel unfairly treated. It usually happens the other way, that you adopt new regulations that apply to people in the future that didn't apply to people in the past. And the people, you know, for example, who cut down their trees before the tree code was in vogue, they sort of have an advantage over people who, now that the tree code is in place, can't cut down their trees. There's always going to be some sort of time inequity. But we are doing our level best here to ensure level playing field. I think that we've succeeded. We will see how this goes over the next few months, and I vote aye.
Folks, please let the council vote. We've listened for 12 hours. It's time for us to make our decision.
Fritz.
So first, I apologize to the 30-plus people who didn't get to speak tonight. That's not our usual way of doing things, and I would have stayed here for much longer because I appreciated what each of the people who did speak had to say. You gave us your own personal stories, pro or con, in both for both sides, and that was very helpful to me. The resolution before us is getting closer to the level playing field that has been aimed for, and I commend Commissioner Novick not only in sticking through this process but in getting to a majority of the council supporting it. I believe we're closer, but we're not there yet. We have indeed retained some of the essential components of our private for hire standards, for instance, 24/7 service, non-discrimination policies, and the proposal is much better in addressing accessibility, thanks to the task force, particularly Sue Stahl and the Commission on Disabilities, looking at the Portland Equal Action Access Plan. And instead of a vehicle standard, it's a service standard, and I am pleased that we're moving forward with that as the first in this next phase and not waiting on that. So thank you very much for doing that. It's important to note we have authorized nearly 300 new permits in the past couple of months, and we were set to authorize a few more. I wonder why any taxi company would want to do that at this point with the level playing field. But with folks who have been unhappy with cab service, help is or was on the way, whether or not the companies who have the authorization for those permits continue to buy the cars, get the permits for the drivers or not, remains to be seen. My main concern, well, I have several main concerns on this, but the one that strikes closest to my heart is the lack of adequate insurance company coverage. It's irresponsible for us to open our citizens up to potentially losing their own and their family's coverage. And it's unconscionable to put drivers on the road with inadequate insurance policies that put the city and the public at risk. 29 weeks ago tomorrow, my husband was killed in a car crash. And the commercial driver that was involved in the crash has yet to accept responsibility, and so I am having to sue. The private driver, who was on his way to work, had relatively good coverage at $300,000 per incident. Unfortunately, two people were killed and two people were injured in that crash, and so I have yet to receive a penny from that policy because it's a maximum of $100,000 per person, and $400 into $300 doesn't go. So the proposal that's on the table of $50,000 for a death is insulting. And that's with a maximum for the crash of $100,000 is completely inadequate. My friend Carrie Fairchild had hospital bills of more than $100,000 in the incident on September 24th. So I'm so sad for the inevitable issues that are going to come up, like the child in San Francisco, where there's going to be arguments about whether the app was on, and there's going to be arguments about what time the crash happened and where the cars were. And that's not acceptable at all. We also don't know the impact of this experimental period on the livelihood of full-time taxi drivers and on the families that they're supporting. And indeed, the part-time drivers might not be any better off in the long term, since Uber drivers in Seattle were protesting last week about diminished wages they're seeing as a result of Uber's rate-slashing practices. Uber sets the rates. So there is the question of, are Uber drivers employers, or are they employees, or are they independent contractors? If it turns out that they are employees, then they will be subject to Portland's sick time law. And I hope that Uber and Lyft are ready to implement that so that those drivers will at least receive some benefits, even though they don't get many. Taxi drivers and local business owners who rely on passenger fares to support their families are more important to me than out-of-state corporations. And frankly, they're more important to me than part-time drivers who don't depend on this way of earning a living. I won't compromise the safety of drivers, passengers, and other road users. There's many more questions that need to be answered. For instance, the fiscal impact of this. We don't know, there's no projection of what the impact is of decreased funding from the taxi companies. And most business license, although it's important to get the business licenses, and I very much appreciate Commissioner Saltzman's amendment, business license taxes don't kick in until you raise until you earn $50,000 in a year. So the shifting of the work to many part-time drivers is going to mean less income for the city, and we should have figured out what that is. I have never been more conscious of my role as the only woman on the council than as part of this debate. The fear that I have of
that I have been taught since I was a little girl, do not get into cars with strangers. And I very much appreciated the radio cab driver the female driver who talked about the dual cameras in her cab and the GPS and the instant radio call and the safeguards for the drivers and the passengers that we have in our current taxi system. So you can bet your bottom dollar that I will continue to be a taxi customer, and I just hope that this deregulation doesn't mean that there won't be adequate taxi coverage for people like me who are never going to get into a stranger's car. I believe we're operating under a false sense of urgency, bowing to the pressures of a particular company, and indeed, as will be seen in the next discussion under the ordinance, that we could be doing this in a more rational and reasoned and thoughtful way that would allow the state insurance to catch up before we implement it, and we're not doing that. By supporting this resolution, I would be endorsing a proposal that is riddled with ambiguity, inequity, and assumptions without the real information that we need to move forward. So, unfortunately, I have to vote no.
Hales.
So, first, this is a change that none of us wanted. The cab companies didn't want it. I didn't want it. And that, frankly, I certainly didn't see coming until the last year or so. And it's a change that, like a lot of change that's all around us right now, is coming pretty fast. If you look around our city and you see how much change is happening just to the landscape, you can see why it's hard to change. And I remember when cell phones weren't this size, but they were about this size. This thing's going to be a museum piece pretty soon itself. So this changes very fast, and the question is, can government keep up to it? And that's what we're attempting to do here. Now, first of all, this isn't a referendum on cab companies' popularity or unpopularity, and it's not a referendum on Uber or Lyft or anyone else's popularity. It's a government trying to regulate in a different world. I have actually nothing but good experience with the cab companies in Portland. I've used them for years, and I used them long before I had any kind of title in front of my name, and I always got courteous service and excellent service, and I appreciate them very much. My father drove a cab. I have no particular love for any of the transportation network companies. In fact, I was in Commissioner Novick's office when an executive of one of those companies called us and told us that they were going to begin operating illegally, and he told them that we would throw the book at them or something to that effect, and we did. And as he said, they ceased operations and paid their fines. And my first conversation with Uber was, we'll discuss a process by which we think about our regulations after you stop breaking the law. And that's the way it should be. And they did stop breaking the law, and we worked on our regulations. We write regulations because not everyone will follow the rules. And we write regulations for the future we want with an eye on bad behavior in the past. And that's what this effort has tried to do. We regulate developers, even though some people would build a house that would never endanger anyone or always be a credit to the neighborhood. And we regulate restaurants, even though most cooks would try really hard to serve healthy food that's safe for people. So we have to regulate this industry, both cabs and this new thing of transportation network companies. I think that what this task force came up with, and with our staff who've worked so hard, Brian, Josh, Ken, Mike, thank you for an enormous amount of work on a very sophisticated proposal. Two things that I really want to note again. One, cities around the world are dealing with this challenge of, do they surrender and just let it happen? Do they try to hold the door closed and keep it out permanently? Or do they write regulations that attempt to fit this new thing into the structure of what government does? And again, that's what we've tried to do here. It's not perfect, but in this case, the perfect is the enemy of the good. We should try something, and we should try this, because it's a good beginning. Should we change it when we find out that things don't work? Sure, just like we've done with the building code thousands of times. So I'm not sure that we're getting it right the first time, but I think we should start. The second thing I want to reiterate is that, you know, we love Portland, and we focus on Portland, and we think we're the center of the world. But if you could call up the map on your phone and go up to a little higher altitude, you'd see that we're surrounded by Vancouver and Camas and Washougal and Gresham and Happy Valley and West Lynn and Lake Oswego and Tualatin, Wilsonville, Tigard, Beaverton, Forest Grove, Hillsboro, and Banks, all of which are incorporated cities in which these TNCs operate with no regulation whatsoever. I think we're doing a lot better than that. I think what we're doing is regulating this responsibly in a first attempt. It probably isn't perfect, but I think it is good, and we should try it. And we should watch very carefully the fortunes and livelihoods of our cab companies, because they're an important part of our local transportation system. And all of us care about that, and we care about the drivers. And so we've got to watch this carefully to try to do as little harm in this change as possible. But to wait for the perfect, or worse yet, wait for the legislature, means that we'll simply be passed by, just like that whole circle of cities that I just described to you who've been passed by and are now waiting for us to do something. So we're going to try it, and then we're going to adjust it, and we're going to make it work. And I'm proud that Portland is being a leader here and that we're sticking our neck out. It's what we should do. We should remember everyone, the most vulnerable of all, and particularly think about what this is going to do for the disabled, because TNCs have agreed to nothing like this anywhere in the world for how it deals with disabled riders. So I think we're making progress here. I'm ready to make more, but for now, we ought to remember, above all, try something. Aye. Okay, now let's move to the ordinance, and Commissioner Novick.
Mayor, I'd actually like to ask Mr. Begier to come back up and help me figure out how to phrase my amendment.
Okay.
So, Ken, what I'm trying to figure out here is whether we can temporarily waive the renewal fees so that people get sort of a new permit for the duration of the pilot. So if somebody comes up for renewal during the pilot, they get an automatic, they get a no fee renewal until the at least until the end of the pilot.
we could do that in the code. I don't know off the top of my head where it goes, Commissioner. What I would suggest doing, perhaps the simplest way, is to simply strike the fee out of the fee table. We're going to have to revisit everything at the end of the 120 days potentially anyway, and we could at that point put the renewal fee back into the fee table if that works.
Mike, do you want to come up too? I just thought we might want to bring PBOT staff up on this.
That would essentially take the fee out of the fee table. We're talking, depending on how the pilot program works, of making permanent code changes to address TNCs in Chapter 1640, and we could put the fee back in the table at that point in time.
Michael, what do you think of that?
I would concur with that approach. That would be amending 1640-590, which is the fee table.
Hey, folks, could you please, if you're having conversations, go outside so we can keep working? Thank you. Go ahead, Michael. Sorry.
So that would be amending 1640-590, which is the fee table, and it would be the taxi driver renewal fee of $100.
So we would strike that?
Yes.
So moved.
At least for during the duration
right.
of the
right.
Second.
I don't have that.
And that is where? I'm sorry. What's the code section again?
It's not included in the ordinance.
Not included in your... We hadn't previously amended 590, the fee table, so that's not included as part of your exhibit. But it's in .590. It's in the fee table. It's the driver renewal fee.
So we can do that here procedurally?
Yes.
Okay. So the motion is to remove, to delete that driver fee table from section 590?
Just the renewal fee, I believe.
the renewal fee, and I would probably say waive it for the 120-day period.
All right, I'd prefer that than taking the table out of the ordinance. I'd prefer that we include a provision that says this renewal fee is waived for the duration of the pilot project.
Is it a renewal fee, or is it charged on the first permit as well?
I believe we're talking about the renewal fee.
But
there is a separate charge for the initial permit.
Right,
the question is, if there are new taxi drivers being permitted during this time period, you would want them to have the same opportunity for a no-fee
application. We're trying to level the playing field, then nobody should have to.
I hear you. I tend to agree with that. So I think
we could waive both.
We could do that.
Both fees.
Okay. Sure. Is that all right with you, Commissioner Novick? That makes sense to you? So for the duration of the pilot project, then we will not charge renewal fees or new driver fees either for TNC drivers or taxi drivers. Is that right?
Okay. Second.
All right. That's a motion and a second to amend the code to make those changes.
Amend the ordinance.
Well, we're actually amending the code, adding that amendment to the ordinance.
Right. Which amends the code.